From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. This week, at a UN conference in Dubai, delegates from 150 countries are gathering to look at the future of the Internet. Some of those countries do not like the open, non-governmental structure of the web today. They'd like to control it, nation by nation, maybe through the UN. That has some big alarm bells ringing this hour on Point, the future of global Internet freedom. You can join the conversation. Would the web be the web if every nation has its own rules, controls, fees, monitoring, limits on access? Can you see that happening? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Joining us first today from Dubai with the latest on the United Nations International Telecommunications Union Conference is Brian Murphy, Dubai Bureau Chief for the Associated Press. Brian, thanks very much for joining us. Who has gathered in Dubai, Brian?
Well, this is a truly global meeting. There's 193 nations as participants in this conference. There are more than 900 proposals being put forward. And the sessions now have moved into a closed door sessions, and we'll expect probably later this week, early next week, after they sift through these 900 proposals, we'll get a sense for which direction the meeting is going.
What are the proposals that are getting the most attention out of those 900, Brian?
Yeah, well, there's three major issues that you can look at as part of sort of themes among these proposals. One, of course, is what you mentioned earlier about fears that any language introduced in this UN treaty that governs telecommunications around the world could be used as justification or cover by nations to impose more restrictions, more monitoring, more surveillance of the web. The second issue is a commercial issue. The Europeans have proposed some kind of system, almost like an entry fee, that companies from outside their borders would have to pay to have access to Internet users in whatever country their content appears. And the third issue, which isn't really part of the proposals but is part of the U.S. concern, is that this meeting is led by bureaucrats, politicians, policymakers, but what they call the stakeholders in the web, the engineers, the designers, the software experts, are not in the discussion. So this is another big issue that the U.S. is leading as well.
Brian, this group, the International Telecommunications Group of the UN, what its role goes all the way back to the telegraph. Does it currently have a stated role in oversight or regulation or anything else of the Internet?
Well, this is one of the points that is being debated right now. It presumably covers all kind of communications technology. As you mentioned, it began with the telegraph, of course evolved to the telephone and other modes of communication. It seems that the Internet would certainly fall under its purview, although the U.S., in fact, is trying to craft a proposal now that would take Internet discussions off the table. Clearly, that hasn't worked so far because even today, Russia has put forward some proposals that essentially are it's cloaked in bureaucratic language, but these are the type of things that raise alarm with the U.S. and countries that agree with it, saying that governments, private sector, and civil society should have a role in overseeing the Internet. But this idea that governments should have a stake in this as well is something that certainly will get pushback from the Americans.
There's a very large American contingent here, 120 plus, I'm reading, not just government but commercial representatives as well, Google, Microsoft, and more. Is there a real fear that at this conference, in the next whatever it is now, 9 or 10 days, we could see some fundamental change in the underpinnings of the Internet that would lead to more nation-by-nation control, the loss of this kind of vision of the global open web, Brian.
Yeah, exactly, Tom. That you just clarified essentially what the worry is. It's a little early to say whether that will emerge, but what is worrying people who would oppose any kind of greater internet control is just that this would open the door to countries using this treaty for more controls and essentially unraveling a little bit of the open democratic structure of the web and parcel it more into government regulations.
And with that could go a very big dream that came with this technology, though the UN leaders, I'm reading here, of this conference are saying, no, we want consensus, we've got to have everybody on board. But as you say, there's a lot that's closed door here, a lot that can be cloaked in bureaucratic language. Brian Murphy, covering the International Telecommunications Union Conference in Dubai for the Associated Press. Thank you very much for being with us today, Brian.
Yeah, my pleasure, Tom.
Joining us now from Washington is NPR's Tom Gelton. He's covered internet issues and global affairs for a long time. Tom Gelton, welcome back to On Point.
Well, hi, Tom. Good to be with you again.
We've heard some of your reporting on this, Tom, but give us your big take. What's going on here? How are the national interests arraying here? Who's pushing for what in this kind of under-the-covers contest in Dubai?
Well, of course, Tom, the internet has in the last 20 years or so become this huge, huge, powerful force that has really transformed the world. It's been, you know, social media developments have been key in the Arab Spring. Throughout the world, you know, the internet has become a vehicle for mobilizing people for political change, for social change, for economic development. And as would be expected with any big, new, powerful technology, there are forces fighting now to control it. And so far, the internet, sort of amazingly enough, is largely ungoverned. It's largely a space that no government, no international entity really controls. And there is this growing movement, particularly among third world countries, countries in the Middle East, African countries, Russia and China, who really are nervous about this idea that the internet is out of control. And so there is a concerted move to establish the principle, and I think this is what we're seeing right now in Dubai, the principle that governments, countries, should have sovereignty over the internet within their borders. And that is something, of course, that is fiercely resisted by advocates of global internet freedom. And that's why this is such a huge, momentous struggle unfolding right now in Dubai.
Is it a real threat, Tom Gelton, or is this a kind of cyber version, you know, of black helicopter paranoia about the UN? Or is it real?
Well, that's a really important question, and I don't actually have a clear understanding of it, because U.S. diplomats are saying, don't worry, we're not going to agree to any changes in internet governance, and the bureaucracy at the International Telecommunications Union, as you said earlier, are emphasizing that any changes will have to be done by consensus. But I think one of the worrisome things is that the ITU is sort of like the UN General Assembly, as opposed to the Security Council, which is one country, one vote. I think it's hard to predict whether we can really assume that momentous changes will be blocked in Dubai by the United States and its allies, because numerically, the countries that want to bring the internet under more sovereign governmental control probably outnumber those who want to maintain the status quo.
I mean, already looking at the news reports coming out, the U.S. and Canada floated a proposal to just flat put the internet off the table. That has already failed. So it's still in play as they go behind closed doors.
And absolutely. The ITU, you know, Tom, you mentioned it got started with the telegraph. The last really major technological development that the ITU was involved in was the assignment of country codes to the global telephone system.
We're going way back. And they haven't even met for a treaty meeting like this since 1988, when there was no internet worth speaking of.
Right, exactly. So the ITU leadership, led by the Secretary General, Hamadoun Touré, who's from Mali, has really been determined to sort of get his foot in the door, you know, with respect to internet governance. So there is just a lot at stake here.
I mean, I'm looking at this, Tom, and as you say, it breaks out kind of first world, third world a little bit,
yes,
but then also a new sort of rising world that wants more control. This looks like another arena in which a decline in U.S. influence has opened up the possibility of something people never imagined just a few years ago, that this could even be considered.
But we should have imagined it. We should have predicted it because, I said, the internet is so powerful and has proven its power over and over again. Authoritarian governments are going to be very nervous about this. I mean, look at what happened in Syria last week, you know, where it appears that the authorities basically shut down the internet in Syria.
Yeah.
They had devised the internet. They had organized internet service providers in such a way that they really were under their control. Now, all over the world, governments have that capability to do that right now. But what they're looking for essentially is kind of political legitimacy. They want to establish the principle that what happened in Syria is within the sovereign right of a government to do. That, you know, that the internet within a country is something that that government should have sovereignty over.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about new alarm bells being rung over global internet freedom, a warning on nations pushing to change the net's default setting from open to closed, controlled, nation by nation, maybe under the auspices of the United Nations. NPR's Tom Gelton joins us from Washington, covers national security and a lot of global affairs, has watched cybersecurity issues for a long time, and has been watching this play out right now. The UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon spoke to the big conference on Monday, the conference in Dubai, via video conference, saying, the object is to have information flow, access.
In the coming days, you will review the agreement that underpins how we communicate with each other across the globe. Our overall objective must be to ensure universal access to information and communication technology, including for the two-thirds of the world's population currently not online.
UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon, and it sounds good, but there are a lot of interpretations of what that might mean, and some of them don't look like open access. For the first time at this Dubai meeting, the head of ICON, the Internet Corporation for Sign Names and Numbers, this non-governmental group that's been so influential in, it's the hand that has held this outside of government influence very often, was asked to speak at the ITU conference. And here's the CEO of ICON. This is Fadi Chahadi at the opening ceremony, Dubai, on Monday.
When I started at ICANN, I said we can build organizations either as fortresses or as oases. I invite you to join me in making our organizations open oases.
Fortress or oasis, and that is kind of the question on the table in Dubai. We're going to hear from, get some more wisdom on this in just a moment. But Tom Gelton, it's interesting. The United States has got a big, big delegation here. They're making a lot of noise about this. So is Google and others who depend on this open access. But the U.S., as you've reported a lot, has some difficulty here because part of what nations want to control against is cybersecurity threats. And the U.S. is widely seen as having been behind some of the biggest cyber weapons yet deployed, Stuxnet and more, Tom.
Exactly. And some argue that by deploying those weapons in an offensive manner, the United States has sort of surrendered the moral high ground. But even an even bigger than issue than that, Tom, is that for many countries, Russia and China, for example, when they talk, they don't actually use the word cybersecurity when they talk about threats like this. They talk about information security. And, you know, when we talk about cybersecurity, we're thinking of worms like Stuxnet that go in and, you know, mess up computer networks in another country.
Or nuclear programs in Iran.
Sure, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But when some other governments talk about information security, they're talking about information as a weapon. And that can mean, you know, the Soviets used to talk about something they called ideological aggression. And that is the idea of using ideas as weapons. So when you really bore into some of these proposals and writings of authoritarian countries, when they talk about information security, they're concerned about governments, including the United States, sort of promulgating ideas via the internet that could undermine an established order. So you have to be very careful to listen and make sure you understand what people are talking about when they start throwing words around like information warfare, information security, mm-hmm. because what that could be indicating is a concern on the part of those authoritarian governments about the internet being used in an ideologically subversive way, not simply, in the way that we think about it.
Against a dam or a nuclear program or a power grid or a defense infrastructure. Tom Gentlin, please stand by in Washington. This is really interesting. This is right in the face of the maybe, I don't know if we'll look back on this as a moment in time when the internet was seen as this new, wide open sort of global mind where exactly all kinds of ideas would compete. Instead, we may have an urge to bring down some gates here. Ronald Deibert joins us right now from Toronto, Canada, director of Citizen Lab. It's a group that fights for global internet freedoms, professor at the University of Toronto, co-author of Access Contested, Security, Identity, and Resistance in Asian Cyberspace, of Access Controlled, of Access Denied. Ronald Deibert, thank you very much for being with us.
Pleasure to be on your show again, Tom.
What's on the line here, Ron?
Well, my opinion on this is that there is a lot of overheated rhetoric and concerns that people have that after this meeting ends, the internet will be radically altered, I think, are
so you do think we're chasing black helicopters here?
To some degree. And let me explain why, because it's a bit nuanced. I think every single one of the fears that people have about what will emerge from this meeting are already taking place. Governments for many years now have been ramping up controls over the internet, not just countries in the south and the east, but countries, industrialized countries, liberal democratic countries as well. The number of governments that filter access to information is growing by leaps and bounds. We've been documenting this over the last decade.
I've seen the number 40 thrown around for the number of governments out of, what is it, 190 plus?
At least 40. Many governments are downloading controls to the private sector. Telecommunication companies are breaching network neutrality left and right, discriminating packets and information flows, which is one of the big concerns that people have might emerge out of this meeting. There's a huge cyber industrial security complex that has sprouted up to service not only an arms race in cyberspace, but these growing government controls. And some of it is very ironic. Let me give you one example.
Okay.
This meeting is being held in Dubai, in the United Arab Emirates, a country that is one of the world's most pervasive filters, sensors of internet content. The technology that is used to censor the internet in that country is provided by a Canadian company, NetSweeper.
In your own country. So a company in your back door helping them be one of the most clamped down in the world. But, maybe what you're telling us is that the dream's already dead, this sort of global internet free flow of ideas. People imagine this remaking the world precisely because ideas and information would flow every which way without government interference. You're saying that's already gone? Does it not matter? As Tom Gentlin says, this could be a UN kind of sanction for that, sort of UN cover of credibility for that.
No, I think it's important to understand the role of the international telecommunications and what might emerge out of this meeting relative to all the other conferences and regional meetings that are happening, national laws, domestic laws, and so on. For example, in India in 2011, they passed a radical Internet Intermediaries Act. If you look at the details of what that act requires telecommunications companies to do, it would make the hair on the back of your head stand up.
Why?
Well, they're requiring Internet service providers, telecommunications companies to remove and censor information objectionable for a laundry list of reasons, including obscenity, anything that violates national security. So extraordinary demands being placed by the Indian government, is the world's largest democracy, on internet service providers in that country. Now, I'm not saying that we should not pay attention to what's happening here. I think the problem is people have suddenly woken up to the fact that the internet is changing. And I think Tom nicely characterized this. What started out as a university-based experiment has grown to become the infrastructure for the entire planet at the very same time that governments around the world are ramping up cybersecurity doctrines and strategies, including weaponizing this space. There's an arms race, Stuxnet underlined that.
Yep.
And there's a whole private sector that is servicing this new threat. And that's beginning to radically alter the architecture for global communications. One meeting is not going to alter what is, you know, this broader tectonic forces one way or another. I think it may, though, serve as a important opportunity for everyone, now that their attention is being paid to something so obscure like the International Telecommunications Union, to reflect on, if you will, the constitution for global cyberspace as a whole. What should be the principles that govern this arena?
I mean, it's certainly got our attention, and it's got a whole lot of Americans there, 120 plus in the delegation, and Google making all kinds of noise about this. Mm-hmm. I mean, they've got commercial interests that are very obvious here, but also, I mean, this is the way the world works or will work or will not work. The U.S. is certainly investing big here. Ron Diebert, Tom Jutland, please stand by. I want to bring our listeners in. Bob in Burlington, Massachusetts. Bob, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks. I think that this entire thing actually is something to be worried about. It would be a debacle just from top to bottom, from trade all the way down to human rights. And I differ a little with Dr. Diebert in that I think that there is actually something important at work here, because what the ICTU decides will influence how the Internet is architected from here going forward. I think that when we try to take a long view of this, we have to remember that if everybody has to adhere to these standards, then the absolute most restrictive things that they decide to build in are going to have to be put everywhere. We actually had something of a victory when the Syrian internet went down. People started providing dial-up numbers on Facebook and Twitter to people in that country. And if something like that is taken away, in some way, at an architectural level, I think we really do lose them.
Bob, I really appreciate your call. I mean, Tom Jutland, this kind of brings out the libertarian in the digerati, you know. Don't tread on me. Don't put a UN sanction for a new legal framework, maybe a new structure for the interconnection of the internet on us here. You know, Ronald Diebert says, well, it's already happening, but here we are. Maybe international law getting more of a grip on this than a lot of people would like to see, Tom.
Well, it's entirely possible that nothing consequential will happen as a result of this meeting. But I think that it's sort of symbolic of a trend that is clearly underway with respect to internet governance. And so, in that respect, I would not disagree with Professor Diebert. But I do think that we're looking at here at a long-term trend to changing the international architecture of the internet. You know, right now, there's only one international body that really has substantive powers with respect to the internet architecture, and that's the group you mentioned earlier, the Internet Corporation for Assigned Names and Numbers, which sounds like a pretty innocuous group. But that function that they provide, sort of as like a global telephone book for internet addresses, is really important. And there have been specific proposals that those functions be taken away
from Russia and others.
And assigned to the ITU. That would be a significant development, and that is one of the. It probably won't happen at this conference, but it was discussed, for example, at an ITU plenipotentiary in Guadalajara, Mexico, in October 2010. Notably, ICANN asked to be represented at that meeting to give its point of view on it, and the Secretary General of ITU, Hamadoun Touré, refused to even allow the ICANN representative to speak. So there is a real competition here. Between ICANN and the ITU, and that's not something we should sort of take lightly.
Let's go to Dan in New Orleans, Louisiana. Dan, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How you doing?
Pretty well. What do you think?
I just have a point about the internet and what's going on in Dubai. I believe that the U.S., for example, would do the same thing. They would censor material, say, if Texas wanted to secede from the Union, and they went violent about it. I mean, they would cut off their access. And actually, right now, the U.S. does cut off access to information that you and I would think is, you know, bad. But
really? Really? Are you sure about that?
Yes.
Let's pick it up. Ronald Ebert, what about it? You know, any country would step in if it saw its national interest threatened and censor the web, filter it. Is that borne out by what we actually see?
Absolutely. I think the caller hits on a very important point. In fact, this is why it's important for people to actually understand a bit of the nuance of what happens at the International Telecommunications Union. First of all, the fear that somehow a new international telecommunications regulation will be passed at Dubai that gives government control over telecommunications is a bit of a red herring because, in fact, guess what? That already exists at the very top of the International Telecommunications Union Charter already. Governments around the world put forward national sovereignty trumping anything globally. And they have a right to cut off communications whenever they see fit for national security purposes. Now, is that going to happen? Highly unlikely. But it's happened in quite a few circumstances, not just in Syria. We saw it in Egypt, in Libya. We've seen it in certain regions of China.
You know, but
in
John, with respect, Ron, it seems to me like you're blowing by what has been sort of the core, a core hope and belief and structure of the internet since it came, since the last meeting of this organization. Something new appeared on the scene, and while that may be in the preamble of the ITU's charter, this thing has grown up pretty much outside that purview.
No, I'm not blowing it, but I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing if I didn't love the internet and certainly believe that in the long run, we'd all be better off if there was an open, distributed, secure commons of information. And again, I think this is why it requires a bit of nuance. The idea that something kind of coming out of ITU is going to do away with the existing structure of internet governance is really laughable. And, you know, that the idea that ICANN is the only institution that governs the internet today is also laughable. The internet is presently governed by numerous decentralized, you know, networks of engineers. It's going to be very difficult to topple that.
But you've got submissions meeting here at this meeting that would change the definition of terms so that member states can regulate the internet like an old telephone monopoly I'm reading here, that they can eliminate anonymity for internet consumers
right. Through
new registration records with government monitoring, that they can replace the nonprofit private sector groups ICANN with global government agencies that would regulate. Those seem like big changes.
Well, they're not really big changes. Everything you just outlined already takes place de facto in your own country. I mean, the idea that communications are anonymous, for example. Have you heard of the National Security Agency?
Yes. I have.
So, please, I mean, give me a break. The National Security Agency routinely monitors global communications, often with the collusion of some of the largest telecommunications carriers in your country, AT&T.
We're all for nuance here, and we want to see how it actually works right now, and I appreciate you doing that. But, I mean, this posture can feel, and I hope we'll take a break. You can come back and explain to us, but it feels like preemptive surrender, Ron.
No. I just think that it requires a bit more nuance, a greater understanding of exactly what goes on in a forum like the ITU.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about new alarm bells being rung over global internet freedom, a warning on nations pushing to change the net's default setting from open to closed control, the default setting at least as we have understood it. Tom Gelton is with us from Washington, D.C., correspondent there for NPR. He's paid a lot of attention to these issues. Ronald Debert is with us from Toronto, Canada, University of Toronto, director of Citizen Lab there. It's a group that fights for global internet freedom. Here's some sound out of Dubai. This was Sally Wentworth of the Internet Society. They campaign for an open web. Talking with Al Jazeera on Sunday there, said she's concerned about some of the proposals on the table at the Dubai conference.
Unfortunately, some of the proposals that we see would take the old telephone model of regulation and simply apply it to new technologies like the internet. That would not be a good thing.
And here's U.S. Ambassador Philip Verveer, who coordinates American global policy, policy on global communications, talking about American concerns. This was on Monday with NPR.
There are some countries that have aspirations for bringing the internet under intergovernmental control. This is true of the Russian Federation, it's true of China. But we think that this would be a very damaging to the efficiency of the internet, to its organic growth, to the free flow of information over the internet. So it's something that we in the United States are very much opposed to.
Ronald Deibert in Toronto, I'm sure you've watched as Google's made a lot of noise about this. The United States has made a lot of noise about this. Your country, Canada, was in with the U.S. in this failed effort just today to try and take this off the table right away. If it's not such a big deal, why is there so much noise? Help us understand, Ron.
Well, you know, when I say it's not such a big deal, what I'm arguing is that this one single meeting is not going to result in radical changes. Let's not overestimate what could happen at one meeting of the International Telecommunications Union. The sky's not going to fall in. At the same time,
I mean, it's kind of a big deal meeting. There hasn't been one like this since 1988. That's not like it happens every other day.
And also, I think it reflects the fact that the power of the international telecommunications relative to global communications, mm-hmm. especially the internet, is to some extent constrained already by existing systems of communication. At the same time, I think the fears that people have are justified, but for the wrong reasons. All of the concerns people have are already taking place, not only among countries like Russia and China, but in our own backyards. I mentioned the case of Canadian technology being used to censor the internet in Dubai itself. You know, your own country requires telecommunication companies to retain data on users, turn it over to law enforcement and intelligence, often without a warrant. The very things that people are concerned about somehow being rubber stamped at the ITU are already taking place. I think these concerns are justified. It's just that maybe, you know, we're worrying too much about what will happen at this one meeting.
Same question then. Why so much noise from such big players, Washington, Google, and right on down? Why, if it's as you described?
Well, I think it's a kind of perfect storm. You have, you know, this one meeting. A lot of people have been leading up to it and paying attention to it. I've participated in a lot of the preparations that, you know, my own country, Google, other companies have been doing leading up to this event. And sometimes events like this focus everyone's attention, and that's a good thing. You know, it's been a long time since you've had on your radio show a discussion about something so arcane as international telecommunications regulations. So it gives an opportunity to discuss these issues. I think there is a simplification of what goes on at international meetings like that, and in terms of what behaviors result from international treaties or principles that are adopted. I think it's more subtle. I think it also tends to obscure the extent to which the concerns that people have are happening in other areas. I think domestic laws, for example, are really critical here. And we're losing sight of the fact that in our own backyards, we're passing legislation that does many of the things that people are lamenting might result from the International Telecommunications Union here in Canada, in the United States.
Maybe you're right, but at least there we feel like we have a hope of democratically affecting those policies in our own backyard. I mean, I don't know. A little more subtlety like this and much of a dream can be lost, I think. Kaylin in Des Moines, Iowa is calling. Kaylin, you're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call.
Yes.
I am a political activist, and I communicate with other activists around the world through both email and various social media. And if these controls get put in place, how is that going to affect people communicating with others around the world, you know, no matter what, whether it be for business or work or school or with other activists like I do?
Kaylin, we'll pick it up. Tom Jelton, how about it? I mean, Ron is, I have no doubt, quite right in saying there's plenty of oversight already here, but here's Kaylin sitting in Iowa, and she has used, it sounds like, and wants to be able to use the internet to communicate with activists, maybe dissidents around the world. Can you see an evolving or devolving sort of world regime around the internet that might over time make that more difficult here, Tom?
Well, the issue is whether we're seeing a balkanization of the internet, so that access to the internet policies are decided on a country by country basis. And just to, I mean, we've been talking here about what specifically can come out of this ITU conference. Just to take one proposal, there is a move supported by the ITU leadership to require content providers like Google to pay a fee to governments, to countries where their services are being accessed.
Okay.
Now, what would happen if Google decides, for example, that in country X, it doesn't make sense for them to provide that fee to them?
It's not worth it, whatever Madagascar wants or something.
That country won't have access to that content. So we're beginning to see the logical conclusion of some of these proposals would be that you have country-by-country differences in terms of internet access. And I don't think there's any question but that there is political support for this idea that country, and it goes back, and Professor Diebert is right, this goes well back beyond before this conference. I mean, if you go back to 2003, 2005, there was the World Summit on the Information Society, and the states at that last summit resolved, and I'm quoting here, all governments should have an equal role and responsibility for international internet governance, and they affirm that states have a sovereign right to enact their own internet policies. All governments. And the big difference between that notion and the way the internet was set up and mostly continues to operate is that it's what we call a multi-stakeholder model. It's not just governments that have a role in the governance of the internet. It's engineering groups, it's civil society, you know, multi-stakeholders, not just governments. So there is a move out there supported by some countries that this should be a matter that is government-controlled as opposed to stakeholder-controlled.
And, of course, to our caller's concern, that could mean a lot. I mean, think back to just February last year. Here's the sound of Tahrir Square, and you know how important the web was in bringing out the protesters who got the Arab Spring, well, to this state. Listen to the size of that crowd. Ronald Diebert, you know the web played a big role in that, and if a government had a fully sanctioned and effective capacity to come in there and shut it down, nip and tuck and close, no doubt, it would have had an impact on what happened in Egypt.
Well, it's, you know, a nice contrast to that is the events that took place in Iran starting in 2009, the so-called Green Movement, where very similar social mobilization erupted, empowered by the web and social media. Some even called it a Twitter revolution. Where is it now? The Iranian government took very effective, subtle countermeasures, including requesting information on distance from major internet service providers and mobile carriers that allowed them to pinpoint their communications and arrest them and effectively neutralize the opposition to such an extent now that we don't even see a green movement of any importance. I'd point out one other thing. We should be concerned about government control over companies like Google. Google has something very useful, a transparency report that they publish. It lists the number of requests that come to them from governments to remove content, to access information about their users, sometimes without a warrant and so forth. Mm-hmm. Guess what country is tops on the list for requests?
Perhaps I'm sitting in it.
You are.
The United States.
Can I just interrupt for one second?
Tom, please.
I think we're confusing two different things here. Privacy is a huge issue, and it's one that Google's record on is tainted, to say the least. Internet access is a separate issue. In the United States, it's effectively impossible now to block the internet to entire groups of people, precisely because there are so many internet service providers that they're effectively outside the reach of the government. You can certainly block specific websites. You can,
though that's rarely done.
You can surveil, but you cannot block internet access on a countrywide basis just because of the way the architecture is set up. The reason that authorities in Egypt and Syria were able to do precisely that is because they designed the security architecture in such a way as to house all the internet service providers either under government-owned companies or in facilities where the government had access to the power to those facilities. So if they couldn't just order the internet internet service providers to suspend operations. They could cut the power off to them. The security architecture of the internet is in the United States is not set up that way. That's a huge difference.
I think to some degree Tom is right, but again, it requires some nuance here. Not that long ago, there were bills before Congress, the Stop Online Piracy Act, PIPA, that were ultimately defeated. But if that legislation went through, it would have required telecommunications companies and internet service providers in the United States to filter access to content on the internet that was deemed to be infringing of copyright and intellectual property.
But isn't that just the point? Those were debated in our polity, and they were defeated there.
Yes,
if it moves to an international regime, a UN setting, where's the power to do that?
No, that's a good point. But what I'm saying here is that the security architecture, so to speak, of the internet in the United States or other liberal industrialized countries, as distributed as it is, does not prevent them from putting in place or debating controls. You know, in many liberal democratic countries, there are content filters in place for access to child pornography. There are content filters in place for hate speech in Europe, for example, in Germany for neo-Nazi material. The idea that the internet has some mysterious magical properties that would prevent this from happening, I think, is unrealistic. It is a physical infrastructure that can be controlled. It can be monitored, and access to information can be blocked. It's a matter of political will.
Well, exactly. And having it in a forum where political will can be exercised, and you're sort of cynical about this notion of mysterious magical properties. You know what? When the internet came on the scene, it did seem mysterious and magical, and it was in no small part because of its openness. And I don't doubt that there are tracks laid all over that now. But isn't the idea here to try and guard that opening impulse of the web, to keep it as open and free as we can for as long as we can? Let me get a call from Boston. Tony, you're on the air. Tony.
Hi, Tom. Hi. It seems to me that what's happening here is that there's a fundamental pull of power from the players behind the scene, like this New World Order, the power, the corporations, the people have a vision for the way that they want the world to be. And then you've got the people. And the only way that the people can communicate is by, right now, the internet, because the press itself has been bought. I mean, there's 80% of all press comes through the hands of about 8 people that have kind of an allegiance towards, you know, a certain country.
Tony, point taken. I don't know about New World Order exactly, but I do know that your sense of the internet as a kind of open network for the people to communicate has certainly been one that people have put a lot of faith in. There's also skepticism about that, and some knowing skepticism. Here's Julian Assange with WikiLeaks, and he, like Ronald Ebert, says, you know, look around. There's so much interception going on already. Here he is last week in an interview with Russia Today talking about totalitarianism on the web already, Julian Assange.
So what's happened over the last 10 years is a ever decreasing costs of intercepting each individual, now to the degree where it's cheaper to intercept every individual than it is to pick particular people to spy upon.
So, okay, it's happening already. I mean, Ronald, your outfit is fighting for internet freedom. So to square that up with your what we're hearing from you today about this meeting in Dubai.
Well, I think what I'm trying to say here is that it's a nuanced point, and furthermore, that we should not just assume or take for granted that the technology alone will do the service of ensuring internet freedom. It's a tough job.
Governance has a lot to do with freedom, does it
absolutely.
Not?
Absolutely.
And isn't that what's on the table in Dubai?
Well, yes and no. I think there certainly we have to be concerned about what comes out of that meeting. I am simply giving you my, you know, intelligent observation here that what will come out of it won't be radical. I don't think we have to throw up our arms and say, hey, you know, next week we won't be able to send email. That's just not going to happen.
You know, I don't think anybody has even had that thought cross their mind. I certainly haven't. But we know that no email next week.
Well, that's
what you're saying, and it's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that it feels like a tectonic kind of shift here in our understanding of the web, and that being played out in an arena in Dubai where there are very different visions of what the web ought to be, maybe long-term. Tom Jelton, what do you think the U.S. Party there is going to think of as victory or defeat in terms of what unfolds in Dubai?
Well, as you mentioned earlier, the United States has already been defeated on one point, which is that they put forward a proposal that the internet be basically outside the realm of ITU jurisdiction, and they were defeated on mm-hmm. that. So they're not going to be able to come back from this meeting claiming 100% success because they've already been defeated on a pretty major point. I think the larger question here is why does there need to be any role whatsoever for the ITU in the internet? What's wrong with the way the system is now? You know, if it's not broke, don't fix it. I think that has been the attitude of the United States.
It is broke.
Why are we even talking about this? Why does the ITU need need any role in the internet at all?
Ronald Ebert says it's broken already. Pay attention to that. The U.S. delegation saying let's not go down this road. We're paying attention to that. We're grateful for the learning we've done in this hour, and we will keep an eye on this space. Ronald Ebert at Citizen Lab, University of Toronto, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you, Tom.
Tom Gelton, we always appreciate your reporting. Thanks so much for joining us this hour.
You bet, Tom.
And listeners, thanks for all your observations. Tomorrow, we're looking back on 2012. Drought, wildfire, ice melt, Hurricane Sandy. What do we have this week? 70-degree temperatures in Chicago in December. And we're asking, what are we actually going to do about climate change? I hope you'll join us. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.